Welcome to the latest episode of the Escapism Podcast. I'm your host, Terrell, and in today's episode, I'll be reviewing Godzilla and Kong, The New Empire, which is the latest film in the MonsterVerse. It came out yesterday. I watched it yesterday. I surprisingly have quite a lot to say about this film, which I didn't expect, but we'll get onto that in a moment. But just to give a quick overview, I'm going to read the synopsis of the film. Godzilla and the Almighty Kong face a colossal threat hidden deep within the planet, challenging their very existence and the survival of the human race. Very basic synopsis. There's a lot more to the film than that synopsis leads you to believe. This film was directed by Adam Wingard, who directed the previous installment, which was Godzilla vs. Kong, but he's also directed other films such as Your Next, The Blair Witch Reboot, and The Guest. And this film stars Brian Tyree Henry, Rebecca Hall, and Dan Stevens. Now, what I'll say about the MonsterVerse, to give quite an overview before I get into this review, just to let you know where I am with the MonsterVerse and how I viewed it over the years, is I've loved it since its inception 10 years ago. I remember, in fact, Godzilla 2014 is one of my most memorable cinema experiences because I was so hyped for that film. Remember, that film came out in 2014, fresh off the ending of Breaking Bad the year prior, and it had Bryan Cranston in it. So it was almost Bryan Cranston's first big movie after Breaking Bad. I loved Breaking Bad, it's my favorite TV show. And I was very hyped for that movie and I thought it looked fantastic. And when it came out, I think it was quite mixed, the reception that it got. I think some people really liked what it was doing, some people didn't. I flat out loved that movie and what it did. I still love it and hold it in high regard today. I really appreciate Gareth Edwards' direction in that first Godzilla movie in this universe. And a quality that film has that I think dissipates as this franchise went on, but it's so strong in that first move and in that first film, and it makes it so effective. And in my opinion, it does make it stand out in terms of the American Godzilla films. It's the way that Godzilla was portrayed as a force of nature and the slow, majestic scale of Godzilla in that film, and how whenever Godzilla makes a move on the planet, it's almost like a natural disaster happens as a result. You know, he washes up on mainland on an island, and all of a sudden you've got a tsunami that's taken over that island because of Godzilla's emerged. I really liked that angle that they brought to that film and to Godzilla, and I think it, for an American adaptation, it really did tap into that kind of substance that the character has always had. And I just really like what was done with it. In my opinion, that film has moments that remind me of Jaws. I feel like the director treated Godzilla like Jaws in some ways, where there was such a build-up and you didn't always see him, you know, but there was such a build-up and you really got to see the impact of his presence. And there's an incredible train sequence, actually, in that first movie, with the train on this, like, bridge, this massive track that's suspended over this kind of, almost like this canyon, and it's at night. Really love that sequence. The ending sequence with, what are they called, the Mutos? Is that what those creatures were called? That whole fight sequence. But I really remember that experience because of all that build-up, all that payoff. I really liked what they did with the story and the characters. And I remember that final fight and seeing that for the first time in the cinema and having an audible reaction when I saw Godzilla's tail light up for the atomic breath and how that was utilized. Really love that film. Moving on from then, you had Kong Skull Island, which came out in 2017. Another film I was very hyped for because Kong, for me, has been a character that I've always been connected with since my youth. And to see a new Kong movie was just an exciting prospect. And Apocalypse Now is my favorite war film. So to see a Kong movie that has the visuals and aesthetic inspired by the Vietnam War and Apocalypse Now, and that story was just insanely cool. Upon release, I was slightly disappointed by the film, but I don't think it was necessarily the film's fault. I think it's just that my expectations at the time were sky high and maybe a bit too high. But I still enjoy the film and I do want to actually rewatch it because I haven't seen it in years. And I think I'll probably appreciate it even more now if I was to watch it. After that, in 2019, we had Godzilla, King of the Monsters, which came out. Absolutely love that movie. A lot of people don't like that film, but I will champion that film. I think I'm one of the biggest fans of that movie. I really like pretty much everything it was doing. The human story, you know, may have been a bit lacking, but wherever the human story was lacking in King of the Monsters, it made up for it with the main attraction, which was those battles, colossal battles with the Titans, the Kaiju, the monsters. And I think it really delivered with, you know, King Ghidorah and all those things. And what I really love about that film in particular is this visual aesthetic. I think there's some absolutely breathtaking shots, some of the best visual effects shots and artistry that we've seen in a blockbuster in recent years, maybe going back the past decade, to be honest. I mean, you've got stunning shots of those monsters, and I like the mythological quality in which they were captured in that movie, because it's made to look, you could look at singular shots of those titans clashing, or even them on their own in isolation in that film, and it looks like a stunning piece of art. And that's something I really appreciated about King of the Monsters. And then in 2021, during the COVID period, of course, Godzilla vs. Kong came out, which is actually quite crazy because it is a COVID memory for me. I remember being extremely excited for that film, of course. It's something I'd waited for since I was a kid. There is actually a tweet on my Twitter account that I managed to pull up from 2013 where I said maybe they'll have the balls to make a Godzilla vs. Kong remake. And little did I know, if I waited, almost 10 years, I would have finally got it. And now we have actually got two movies, including both of them. But I remember that excitement that I had, during lockdown, being a bit bored, trying to find things to do, and all of a sudden, a brand new Kong and Godzilla crossover film was releasing on, I think it released, did it release on Apple? Yeah, it did release on Apple. So it released on Apple in the UK, HBO Max in America, and I remember renting it and watching it. I think I watched it twice within the span of a couple of days. Because I just enjoyed it, and that was just such a strong memory I had from lockdown, is getting to watch that. And yeah, that film delivered. I really enjoyed that film and what it did, its neon aesthetic, the visuals. I think it captured the scale of these two, iconic creatures of cinema, and the clash was well worth it, and the fight was really well done and well choreographed, and I really enjoyed that. So it's been 10 years. Godzilla 2014 literally came out 10 years ago. And we've only had what's that? Four, well, this is the fifth film. So that's actually quite interesting. Because if you look at Marvel, for example, one thing I've always appreciated about the MonsterVerse as well is, to me, it's come organically. And that's what I really like about it. Now, the MCU in its early days also happened organically. But with the MonsterVerse, it really was, Godzilla 2014 came out. Okay, that done well. Kong came out. Okay. That done well, and there was like a subtle connection with Monarch in between it, and then they've just allowed it to naturally expand installment to installment. But one thing I really appreciate is they haven't oversaturated the market with these films. Like I said, in 10 years, there's only been five movies, which isn't a lot when you compare it to what Marvel's been doing, when they pump out, 10 movies or five movies and five shows in a span of 2 years or something like that. So I think it still retains a sense of novelty, so that you can actually allow yourself to anticipate and get excited every time one of these films comes around. And I really appreciate that. And so yeah, coming into this movie, it's been 10 years, and I have to admit, this new film, The New Empire, was the first film in this franchise that I was actually trepidatious about prior to release. I saw the trailers and something just felt a little bit off, Something felt a bit off. And there are some changes to the universe that, judging by the trailers, kind of just made me a very cautious. And one of those main things was the scale and weightlessness of the Titans based on the trailer. Like I said, one of the things I really appreciated about Godzilla 2014 was the weight and scale of Godzilla. There's like a shot in that movie at the airport when he first appears on land. I think it might be the first time you properly see him in the film, actually. And it takes him a good 5 to 10 seconds to lift his foot up and take one step on the ground, because he's so massive, he's carrying so much weight, and you get that sense of scale. All of that was gone looking at the trailer for Godzilla and Kong. And I started to worry about it, because you had shots in the trailer of Godzilla and Kong running at each other or running alongside each other, and I'm thinking they just feel completely weightless. And then, due to the nature of the scenery that they were in the trailer as well, it's like there's no sense of relatable scale. Like, if you put Godzilla alongside a building in a city that we're familiar with, we can see the scale because we know how big a skyscraper is. But when you put them in blank space and you've got them, they don't look as big anymore because we haven't got that frame of reference. So there were a lot of little red flags I could see in the trailer, which made me very cautious. And I did tweet out a couple months ago, or maybe even a few weeks ago, that I almost think this could potentially be the first MonsterVerse movie that I don't like. Which I was hoping that wouldn't be the case. But I was almost prepared for it, because everything I was seeing in the trailers, it wasn't really building the same type of excitement that I usually have for one of these films, which is a shame. And I basically said all of this to say that I had many concerns prior to release of this film. And now I want to say that I am shocked, having watched the movie, to say that I loved this film. And it was so much better than I expected it to be. And I'm over the moon that that's the fact that I'm over the moon that I love this so much, to the point where I watched this yesterday and I'm already thinking about potentially watching it again. And I didn't think I would go back and watch this film a second time because I just didn't think I would have liked it that much, if at all. But I am really considering going back to watch it either, tomorrow or the day after across this Easter holiday weekend. Films with Kong and Godzilla have always been special to me because it's like a link to my childhood that I've maintained throughout adulthood. And for that reason, I think I enjoy the nostalgia and entertainment of seeing these iconic monsters of cinema on the big screen. And one of the coolest things about Godzilla and Kong, in my opinion, is that they are basically as old as cinema itself, especially Kong, because they predate almost every significant film and story to be created within this medium. Kong. It's been 91 years since the first King Kong movie. It's been 70 years since the first Godzilla movie. These characters are iconic pillars of cinema. Whether people want to admit it or not, whether you're interested in it or not, it's a fact. They're iconic, especially when it comes to fantasy in cinema and what fantasy can bring to the medium of film. These characters are the definition of iconic. So to see them all these years later on the cinema screen again, it's cinema heritage in like the coolest way possible. Now, this film focuses so much on the Titans that I was pleasantly surprised by it. There's so many scenes of significant length that are solely focused and involving the Titans, and it made the experience much more engaging as a result. There's that argument that people make with, say, the Transformers movies, for example. Why are we focusing on the humans so much? Why can't we just get a movie set on Cybertron with the Transformers? And people often argue, oh, well, studios think, you need that human link somewhere. And maybe that's true, to a degree, you want a human link for the audience to kind of connect with through it. I don't think that's necessary, but I understand that thought process. But a lot of those types of films tend to overdo it on the human side and underservice what you're actually paying to see, whether it's the Transformers or Godzilla or Kong. And what this film does so well is it actually puts the balance in favor of what you're paying to see, which is the monsters and the Titans. And like I said, those longer sequences, it was very noticeable compared to the previous movies in this franchise, in this MonsterVerse. It was very noticeable because you'd get what felt like good 5 to 10 minute long sequences with no audible dialogue. You've just got monsters expressing themselves to each other and a lot of character work between the Titans themselves, which is just portrayed through their expressions. And I really appreciated that. And I think the visual effects artists did a really good job helping convey emotion between, especially with Kong and other apes, conveying their emotions so that you could have a long scene with no dialogue, but you can understand how these creatures are feeling and how they're responding to one another. And I think the film did such a great job with that aspect of it. Having enjoyed the MonsterVerse so much, I find myself interested to see how they continue to expand it and the world building that surrounds it. And this installment takes major strides in that department by focusing a lot on Kong and the Hollow Earth and its history. We see much more of the Hollow Earth in this film, and we get to explore different locations within the Hollow Earth, which I really liked. And we saw, locations that we hadn't seen before. And Godzilla is present throughout this film. And I've actually seen some complaints about Godzilla's screen time in this film. But personally, it didn't bother me because it made sense for the story. And he was off completing, I mean, he's essentially off completing side missions for the whole movie, powering up to new forms like a Super Saiyan. And to me, that's just hard. Like, that's hard. Like, he knew he had to run the fade, he knew he had to level up. So he went and was prepping himself for the whole movie. I really like that. And one thing I have to say as well, for those that are complaining about his lack of screen time, the one benefit of what they do with him in this film, aside from like two scenes where he's like hibernating, one which is actually really funny because there's a scene where he is essentially sleeping, taking a nap inside the Roman Colosseum in Rome. And I thought that's just a great visual gag. Apparently, the director said that he was influenced by his cat sleeping. And that's what made him put Godzilla in the Colosseum and made him almost look like a cat sleeping. But yeah, aside from two scenes where he's hibernating. Every other scene in the movie with Godzilla, he's on smoke. Like, he's literally fighting the whole movie. Like, every time you see him, he's destroying something. He's fighting something, you know? So although they pepper him throughout the film sparsely, when you get him, you're getting what you're paying to see with Godzilla, which is the action. So I can't complain at all about how he was actually utilized in the film. And I actually think it benefited the film because it allowed you to focus on Kong. Kong is the emotional center of this film. His journey, his story is the emotional hook of the film and where a lot of the drama is coming from. And Godzilla is kind of like that nice little spice that you put on the meal to kind of bring out the flavor even more. And I think they utilized him really well. The expansion of the mythology I liked with this film, and when it built up to the film's big moments, it really paid off. So you have this young ape, I believe his name's Suko, that befriends Kong. And I liked that character and how he was used in the film. I if I'm being honest, when watching the trailers, I thought he was going to be one of those, not annoying characters, but I thought I knew exactly what they were going to do with that character, and that he'd be the cute and innocent character. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, even that character goes on a bit of an arc and a journey throughout the film, and I really appreciated it. And in fact, his first scene, his introductory scene, really caught me off guard in a great way, in a way that was entertaining and a way that was actually surprisingly funny as well. But I really did like and really did warm to that character as the film went through. But he is also one of the characters that was able, they were able to allow to emote a lot throughout the film, so that you could, despite the lack of a verbal communication, you could really get a sense for how Kong and Suko were connecting with each other and understanding each other through the scenes. The new villain, Scar King, is different to what we've seen in the MonsterVerse thus far, and the inclusion of other apes within this story is a major revelation and a big change for this universe going forward. Because remember, going from Kong Skull Island to now, we've always been under the impression that Kong is the last of his kind, and there's no other apes, no other, you know, form of chimpanzees, orangutans, whatever, on Skull Island. He's the last one. But this story upends all of that by revealing that there is a kind of society of apes and orangutans that we were unaware of and that Kong was unaware of. So how does Kong respond to that? Suddenly realizing that he's not alone anymore, suddenly realizing that, you know, there are apes that may need his help. And that's what makes the dynamic that's created here with the Scar King really interesting. I like the Scar King's presence and his methods of dominance and control. It was smartly done, and it gave a fresh dynamic to a titan slash villain in this franchise, because he's less about raw strength and he's more effective through his uses of manipulation. So whereas Kong might have the power, Scar King has the brains even more so in order to manipulate a situation to get out of it or to come out on top. And I think he was quite a formidable and despicable villain. And his first scene, in fact, his first sequence, and that's another thing, actually, the Scar King doesn't actually have much screen time himself. And he doesn't come into the film as early as you might think he would. So there's actually quite a lot of build up, because you know he's coming from the marketing, there's actually quite a lot of build up to his reveal. And I want to say his introduction may, you know, take a good 40 minutes to an hour to actually happen in the film, if I remember correctly. But it is so effective, because when you do get that first introductory sequence with the Scar King, it's extremely impactful. It's one of those edge of your seat, you know, you're really locked in. And I think they really handled his introduction really well. And for a villain that they created solely for this film, they've done a great job. And I remember seeing an interview with Adam Wingard where he spoke about how he views the Scar King as Kong's nemesis in the same way that King Ghidorah is Godzilla's nemesis. And I really like that idea. And from what they did in this film with those two characters, I just think that they did really establish that dynamic in that way, where I could definitely see the Scar King becoming like Kong's kind of main nemesis in this universe that he had to overcome. The fight sequences in this film are bombastic and entertaining. There's some really creative choices made with certain fight sequences. I don't want to spoil too much, but there's one sequence, one battle between certain titans. I'm not going to say who, but it takes place essentially in zero gravity. And I thought that was a really cool idea, really worked really well. There's also more titans featured in this film than I expected, all with really cool designs. And I know for a fact that if I was a kid, if I was 10 years old watching this film, it's the type of thing that would make me want all the toys of all the different titans. Titans. It's the type of thing I would remember like back in the day. You'd probably go to McDonald's after watching the film. They'd have the little figures in the Happy Meal and I'd want to collect them all. Really cool stuff. And that's something that I really appreciate about the MonsterVerse and what it's done. Whether they're adapting existing Toho monsters or other monsters or creating their own, they all have great character designs. They're all really interesting to look at, and it all makes me interested in seeing more of what this world can offer in that regard. And that's why I think the Hollow Earth is such an interesting location that they've created for this universe, because it allows them to just get really creative with their creature design and just show you things that you haven't seen before. And there's a lot of that in this film, and I think that added to my enjoyment so much. And it also added to that childlike nostalgia that I got watching this film, because it reminds me of, Peter Jackson's King Kong and seeing Skull Island and the creatures on that island and things like that. I think I really, really appreciate that aspect of what this film had to offer. And the one downside I would give to some of these battles and clashes that happen in the film, especially early on, is some of them, I swear to God, some of them only last like 30 seconds, and it's so disappointing. Not so disappointing. Like I still thoroughly enjoyed those moments, but I'm like, bruh, come on, like give me a little bit extra, man. Give me a little bit extra. You'll see like a moment where, say, Kong or Godzilla is confronted by some cool Titan, really cool creature design. There's one that's in water. That's all I'll say. You'll know when you see it. The design was beautiful, and I'm like, oh, this is about to be something crazy. 30 seconds later, it's over, and I'm like, nah, like give us a full-fledged scene out of that. Like, give us a full-fledged scene. If that's one of my biggest, and to be honest, it's not a significant issue. It's kind of a nitpick, but that is one of my biggest criticisms of this film, which goes to show how much I did enjoy this movie, if this is one of my biggest criticisms. But it's just give me more. But at the same time, it's a good thing that they got me wanting more. So I can almost have to praise them for that in the same breath. If I were to speak about some negatives, actually, I think the sound design was good, but I think it could have been much better and packed more of a punch within the overall mix. I think the mix needed more clarity, because the sound mix sounded muffled at times, and it didn't feel like it was maximizing its soundscape to match up with the colossal battles on screen. And I'm a sound person. Like, I love audio, I love music, so I notice those things quite a lot, and I'm paying a lot of attention to that when I'm watching a film, especially a film on this scale. And I just feel like there was something a little bit off about the audio in this film. And it could have been my cinema, but I don't think it was. I think it was just the actual mix of the movie. And the soundtrack too. Like these films, the music in these films and these characters, they carry such like iconic music. And I felt like the themes in their scores, they didn't know when and how to appropriately use them. So, like the distinctive character motifs within the score, because I think the MonsterVerse has done well at blending the iconic scores of the past, especially with Godzilla, and creating new ones at the same time. And I just feel like they didn't know when to use it appropriately in this film. There were certain moments where it felt choppy, and like certain recognizable themes in the score didn't get enough time to play out. So like they'll have a moment or a scene where something happens, you'll get a hint of that theme, but it doesn't really last long to kind of carry its impact through the scene, if that makes sense. One thing I like about the MonsterVerse is the distinct visual identity of it, and how each installment has a bit of uniqueness to it in that regard. This film certainly follows in the footsteps of Godzilla versus Kong visually, but one thing I appreciate is that for a visual effects heavy film, and one with actors spending most of the film against a green screen, they do make the effort to make it look visually interesting. And there's a varied use of colors and lighting that adds depth to the frames and makes them look more real. Whereas some films nowadays, I don't want to have to call it out, but I'm talking about the MCU, tend to have a very flat and almost two-dimensional look to them when the actors are stood against a green screen or the volume. But this film doesn't have that, because they do actually focus on, and I think there was a bit of a blend of real sets and real lighting against a green screen, so it wasn't just purely green screen. And that little change does make a difference. This film does have the smallest budget of a MonsterVerse film, around $135 million, which is, of course, is still a lot, but in terms of the majority of blockbusters that get made today, that's actually kind of modest. And the film still looks good visually, but I think I could notice the difference in the budget compared to some of the other films, because that is the like I said, the lowest budget of the franchise thus far. At times, the visuals didn't seem as sharp or as striking as previous installments. There was a bit of a haziness to the visual effects at times, and it looked like that was purposely applied to mask maybe a lack of detail in some of the visual effects, maybe. And like I said, it was quite noticeable to me. But if the lower budget means that these films can make more of a profit and ensure that the MonsterVerse continues, then it's a worthy sacrifice. The humans, let's talk about the humans. See, I've gone so much of this review without talking about the humans. That goes to show how much this film focuses on the monsters. But let's talk about the humans. The human cast served their purpose really well, I think. And I think the cast did a good job of what they were given, which wasn't much, to be honest, outside of some expository dialogue and some humor, but they were likable actors and likable characters, and that's all you've got to do in these type of films, to be honest. If you're not going for an in-depth, you know, human drama story like Godzilla Minus One, and you're going for something a bit more quirky, a bit more campy, a bit more fun, a bit more just overall entertaining and bombastic, just make the characters likable, you know. And they do that here, and that makes a big difference. And I do think the choice to remove a human antagonist is one that serves the film really well, because it can focus more on the Titans. These films can focus more on the Titans as a result of it. And I think when they do introduce human antagonists, and I'm using the last film, Godzilla versus Kong, as an example, it's just taking up screen time, more screen time, focusing on humans. And usually the antagonist they introduce, aside from Samuel L. Jackson in Kong Skull Island, usually the human antagonist that they introduce is just not that interesting, you know, and it's not what you came to see. If you want a villainous presence, you want that in the monster. So removing that entirely, I think, did definitely benefit this film in a big way, especially in terms of that dynamic between showcasing the monsters and showcasing the story. The young girl who's mute, who was in the previous movie, she has an arc of her own in this film that was nicely done, I thought. And Dan Stevens is a new character who plays a trapper and kind of someone that services the Titans, trying to help them. He tries to help Kong in a number of situations. He was a very likable character and had a lot of personality. And the same can be said about Brian Tyree Henry, who also brought a lot of personality to his role. That was he was first introduced in the previous movie, but he's back again. But I thought his chemistry with Dan Stevens was actually really good, and they're kind of like the entertainment center of the human dynamics in this film. And Rebecca Hall, who I think is actually quite an underrated actress, she had to play a role a bit more straight in this film than the others, but she was still a likable presence nonetheless. I still have an issue with the weightlessness and agility of Godzilla in this film. It's so different to how he's portrayed in even King of the Monsters and Godzilla versus Kong. Like, if you forget 2014, that's like night and day difference what we get in this film compared to 2014. But I even think in King of the Monsters and Godzilla versus Kong, there's still an aspect of that scale and weight that you feel, despite the fact that he's a bit more agile and moves quicker. Whereas in this film, there's moments where he dives off cliffs into water, which I understand is a reference to the older movies, but I just think for this universe, it kind of makes you suspend your disbelief a bit too much. And there's other moments where he literally jumps in the air into attack when he's attacking enemies. And that felt like it just took it a little bit too far, given the realistic roots of the MonsterVerse and with Godzilla 2014 in particular. And I hope that the next film, if they make another film, strikes a better balance in that aspect, because I think all the films prior to this one in the franchise have done a better job at balancing that. But yeah, that is my thoughts on Godzilla versus Kong. Sorry, Godzilla and Kong, or it's Godzilla cross Kong, whatever they're calling it. Godzilla X Kong, whatever. But that are my thoughts. I have my doubts, but I'm shocked by how much I loved it. And it was a fun time. Like, I enjoy seeing the mythology of the MonsterVerse expand. And like I said, this film takes big strides with that. There's so many different Titans, so many different battles and Hollow Earth locations. It was fun and nostalgic regardless of its flaws. I was very tempted to go and watch this in IMAX, and I didn't. And now I don't want to say I regret it, but I kind of wish I did see it in IMAX. So I'm going to recommend to you that you go see this in IMAX if you can. It's definitely worth it. If you liked the previous MonsterVerse movies like I did, I'm sure you'll like this one. If you were more on the fence about those previous movies and there's certain ones you like, certain ones you dislike, then I'm not really sure how you may feel about this one. I'd say if you liked Godzilla versus Kong, you're probably more than likely going to enjoy this one, because it kind of feels, you know, like it is kind of a direct sequel to that, but it feels kind of, in terms of its aesthetics and how the creatures are portrayed, it feels very in line with that. But if you prefer, say, Godzilla 2014 and maybe Kong Skull Island and didn't really like what they've done since, then maybe you'd be a bit more on the fence about how you feel about this one. But I'd still recommend it regardless. I had a really fun time. And I think blockbusters like this are important. I tweeted something earlier and I said I'm gonna stand on it and it's gonna sound crazy. I'm not saying Godzilla Cross Kong is a better film than Dune Part 2, but when it comes to outright fun and entertainment, it takes the cake for me. And I think these two films coming out in the same month is actually a very interesting dynamic because I think they symbolize the yin and yang of blockbuster filmmaking. And I think both are important for different reasons. You've got the very sophisticated, in-depth film and challenging film in Dune Part 2, which is an audio visual experience, on the highest level. And then on the opposing end, you have the more, laid back entertainment, fun and bombastic blockbuster in Godzilla Cross Kong. I think we need both types of blockbusters and they both complement each other. And we both can appreciate each side of the blockbuster spectrum because the other side exists. I think it's important. But yeah, that's my thoughts on Godzilla Cross Kong. Thank you for listening to this review. Make sure to follow on your respective platforms so you don't miss any future episodes. Follow me on TikTok as well at Escapism Podcast for content on there and clips. And I'll catch you guys in the next episode.